Well, good afternoon, brethren. Hope you're having a nice Sabbath. And hope it continues that way. I hope you've been having a good Sabbath. We got blown around by the wind coming down here. I guess it's been awful windy throughout the area. And made our usual stop at Cracker Barrel for breakfast, so I feel good about that. I had a couple of, a rough week a couple of weeks ago. I've had a couple of challenging weeks anyway, and for some reason I came down with a flu, a very brief flu. I think it lasted about 6 hours. But I had a fever, I was trembling, I was laying in bed in the afternoon, and I guess I thought it's pretty serious because I got to planning my funeral. One of the things, I think I told you this, and in fact it was on television a few weeks ago in Springfield, that one of my things I've told my wife, I want no organ music at my funeral or visitation. I want a fiddler playing Maiden's Prayer, which is an old Bob Wills song that's a favorite of mine. And I asked, some of you are familiar with the Haygoods in Branson, I asked Dominic Haygood, who's one of the main Haygoods, if he would do that. And he said, not only will I do it, I'm looking forward to it. Well, no sooner did I get here today than I heard a little rumbling. Somebody had asked me where we were having the feast. Or maybe I said, where are you going to the feast this year? And the person said, well, I don't know, where are we having the feast? Apparently, there is a rumor going around, a murmuring, that perhaps we're not going to Branson, that we're going to Hot Springs. And maybe somewhere else, and that we'll be changing locations. So, I'm no better informed than anybody else at this point, although I was in on some of the negotiations as to where we would go, and aware of some of the visits that were made to the area by Charles Mallaire, who lines all this up on the, at the top level in the church, well, the top human level in the church. And, apparently there were some rumors that we may be going to Hot Springs. That we may be changing locations within Branson. Is that true? Yeah, some of it's true. Of course, it can't both be true. But there was some negotiation that went on a few weeks ago that I was a part of. And Mr. Mallaire came and toured the area, and I was not here. He didn't let me know he was in town. He just kind of snuck through. But he did consider the options, because we've been at the Ball Knobbers in Branson for I don't know how many years now, and we've had a good relationship with him, and I think hopefully still do. But he toured some other theaters up there and some other possible places to meet. And also, I understand, made a trip to Hot Springs. Well, if you can go online now, and you'll find this when you get your brochure in the mail, it's pretty well spelled out. If you go online and go to the members' website and go to the Feast of Tabernacles, that'll take you to the brochure, which is already online. And if you go to Branson, you'll see that, yes, we are meeting in Branson this year. However, we will be meeting at the Presleys. Now, nobody told me that officially, even though I was there when we negotiated with the Presleys, and we did not come to a final decision. But I said, well, let me know as soon as anybody knows, so I know where to drive when I go to the feast, because I am going to Branson this year. But anyway, it will be, as per the brochure, in Branson, and at the Baldnar, or at the Presleys. And I think with Mr. Mallaire looking around and looking at sites in Hot Springs and things like that, the murmuring kind of gets out of hand. Somebody tells somebody else what they heard. Somebody else tells somebody else what they heard. What I'm telling you is what I heard from, well, Joe Dobson, who will be our feast coordinator again, and what I read in the brochure, which you all can do online if you want, or wait for the paper copy, for those of you who remember paper, to come to your home in the mail. So I hope I cleared that up, because sometimes we are subject to certain misconceptions. Certain things happen, certain things are said unofficially, and it kind of ripples through the congregation or the congregations or the church as a whole. And of course, we see that in society too. We see that probably in our families. We see that maybe where we work. I remember the company I worked for up until about 12 years ago, there was a rumor it was being sold. And then there were all kinds of rumors as to who was buying the company. And it got a little scary because some of the rumors weren't things that we would all like. And people were afraid they'd lose their jobs as a result. A I did. But I stuck there for a year afterwards, and we had a very kind and amiable parting of the ways. But things like that happen. We hear rumors. We hear murmuring. We hear things that we're not too sure of. And, of course, if you go to the supermarket, usually in the checkout line, they have the National Enquirer. Inquiring minds want to know. And a lot of the stuff on that in there is not real verifiable. Some of it turns out to be true, I guess. I hope not. I didn't read it. I saw the headline. In fact, my wife pointed it out, and it concerned Roy Rogers, who is one of my heroes. Wasn't necessarily as a kid, but having met him and having visited a lot with his family, I'm sure he was what he claimed to be. Pretty sure. Then I saw this thing in National Enquirer, and I thought, that's not Roy Rogers. That can't be true, and I hope it's not. Of course, he's no longer alive to defend himself, but, you know, National Enquirer. And then there's a bunch of them. I sometimes see the headlines. I think I bought one once just as a visual aid when I was giving a sermon on gossip. But we read those things. We see these television stories. We go online. That's a wealth of misinformation. Some of you remember CB radios. I always used to think of CB radios as a deep well of misinformation because you could hear all kinds of things. And also all-night talk radio. Well, I get up pretty early, but I don't turn the radio on for a while. But my friend Robert Hancock, who rode down with me today, he's up late at night sometimes. Lives that wild life, you know, lives on the edge. And he gets to hear some of that stuff, and he was relating some of it as we were coming down here today. And maybe some of you hear that, maybe some of you believe it. Some of it's fairly harmless, but it happens. People tend to murmur, whether it's in print or whether it's, in what we say, in what we say to one another. And I looked up the word that's used for murmur, and it basically means to whisper, a guarded expression of discontent. I want to tell you something about Mr. Martins. Just between you and me, I don't want to go any further. Do I have your attention now? I don't know anything about him that you probably don't know, and I certainly don't know anything bad about him. But when somebody says something like that, your ears kind of perk up. You have an inquiring mind. You want to know. And, you know, some of these things get out of hand a little bit. I know something happened to me a few years ago that I wasn't there for, but it was kind of embarrassing. My wife and I were going to a country music show, and I couldn't make it. So I stayed home or did whatever else I was doing, and she went by herself. And the band there and whoever was performing realized that my wife was there and I wasn't, and said, Don Paul, which is the way they know me up there, it couldn't be with us, but his wife is. Would she please stand up? And she did, and some other woman stood up too. She said, "What is that all about?" And apparently this other lady later met her and said, "Well, I was just kidding, you know." But things like that get completely out of hand. And if you've got dirt on somebody, it's kind of easy to get people's attention. We can see examples of this in Scripture, of course. We can look at ancient Israel, some of the murmuring that went on there, Exodus 15. Exodus 15. Yeah, my last name is Pirwitz, but I don't burden people with it, so. Because I used to get cards and letters, and some of the misspellings are atrocious. And then people in Brooklyn, New York, they mispronounce the name, and it seems they like to say perverts. Well, that would be appropriate if both my wives were at one place at one time. Exodus 15 and verse 24. And the people murmured against Moses and said, "What shall we drink?" They were thirsty. They didn't have anything to drink. What did they do? I don't know that they necessarily went to Moses or tried to do anything about it, but they just murmured. It just seethed within the group there. You know, we don't have anything to drink. And then in Exodus 16, verse 2, Exodus 16, beginning in verse 2, right across the page in my Bible. The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The children of Israel said to them, "Would that we have died at the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt." The land of Egypt. They just come out of Egypt. You know, this cry went up from the Israelites. God heard it. You know, God sent Moses. They were delivered. Following a string of miracles, which were an outstanding string of miracles over the period of probably several months, the parting of the Red Sea, all these plagues that they'd been witness to. And they said, "Would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots." Oh, it was good back then. You ever get a little bit hungry? You know, if you're fasting on a particular day, maybe Day of Atonement, or maybe just some other day for some reason. I notice if I'm driving around on those days, I'll look around and I'll see restaurants that I normally wouldn't think about going to, but when you're fasting, they look so good. And that's the way they were here. They were hungry. They weren't necessarily fasting, but they weren't getting the food. They were, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we had this great barbecue, you know, wow, yum, yum. And we did eat bread to the full. And you brought us forth into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger. We're all going to die out here. We don't have enough food. So they murmured about that. And verse 8 of Exodus 16, excuse me, "And Moses said, this shall be," see if I'm in the right place here, yeah, "that we shall give you this evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord hears your murmurings, which you murmured against him." These were against God. "And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord." Now, God apparently had mercy on them, but who were they murmuring against? You know, they were murmuring against, again, their physical leader, Moses. But Moses was following God's instructions. It was on God's instructions that Moses brought these people out into the wilderness, out of Egypt. And they were questioning it. They were murmuring about it. They were saying a lot about it. And if you look back in Exodus 14, that wasn't the first time they murmured. Exodus 14, beginning in verse 10. Now you just picture this. Charlton Heston, Moses. Okay, when we think of Moses, we sometimes, if you're a movie buff, you think of Charlton Heston because he was Moses in the Ten Commandments. And you can picture him. I don't know if it was exactly like they had it in the movie, but standing here at the Red Sea, "And Pharaoh drew nigh to the children of Israel, lifted up their eyes. Behold, the Egyptians marched after them. They were sore afraid." Well, here it is, probably the most powerful army on the face of the earth, following these probably 2 or 3 million people, and had them boxed in. "And they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore have you dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt?" What are you trying to do? Get us killed? They're at the Red Sea there. "And is not this the word that we did tell in Egypt, saying, let us alone?" I don't remember that, but apparently they thought, we were doing all right there. "That we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die out here in the wilderness." So they, you know, disagreed with the direction God was leading them. Of course, we can see later that they were delivered, through the Red Sea. They were able to, you know, due to a miracle from God. Numbers 14 and verse 26. Numbers 14 and verse 26. "And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, how long will we bear evil of this congregation, which murmur against me?" Again, they were murmuring against God. They didn't like the direction that God was taking them in. "I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say unto them, as truly as I live, says the Lord, you have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you. your carcasses. This was after they decided they didn't want to go into this land that God had prepared for them. You know, the spies came back and he says, your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness. And all that were numbered among you according to your whole number from 20 years old and upward. Anybody over 20 is not going to survive this ordeal. Those of you who have murmured against me, doubtless you shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun, but your little ones, the kids. And this is something that, you know, you hear when kids are put in danger. That sort of finds a special place in our heart, particularly when it's our kids that are put in danger. And your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be found in the wilderness. And so, you know, they were going to die, but the kids were going to be spared. Much to the contrary of what, you know, what they feared. What about our kids? You know, you hear that too around Christmas time. I know we heard it when our kids were little. My little boy is turning 50 this year. But, when he was a little kid and he had his little sister and another little sister, and some people found out, particularly in the family, that we weren't keeping Christmas. Well, what about the children? What about the children? Aren't they going to hear about Santa Claus coming down the chimney? Big lie. But that's what kids are taught. What about the children? And that's the thing here. They were concerned. Well, what about our kids out here in the wilderness? Are they going to die with us? But no, they were going to survive. And after the number of days which we searched the land, 40 days, a day for a year, you shall bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and you shall know that know the breach of my promise. And I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. You know, they were against God. They weren't wanting his will to be done. In the wilderness they shall be consumed, and they shall die, and all the men which Moses sent to search out the land, who returned to the congregation to murmur against him. You know, they said, well, God wants us to go in there. There's big guys in there. You know, there's giants. It's a hostile country. Of course, they brought back grapes, apparently the size of grapefruits. You know, then it was a good country. Even the men that did bring up an evil report of the land died by the plague before the Lord. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were among the men, went to search out the land, lived still. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. What have we done? You know, then they were sorry, but they were going to be punished. They were going to be punished, and it was kind of appropriate that those who didn't want to go into the land, well, they weren't going to go. The children they feared would die in the wilderness, they were going to make it. They were going to go there. We'll see other murmurings. We can see that the Pharisees murmured about Christ and his disciples. Turn to Luke 5 and verse 27. Luke 5 and verse 27. We'll begin there. Luke 5, 27. And after these things, he went forth and saw a publican, I'm sorry. Don't want to get political here. Named Levi, sitting in receipt of custom, and he said unto him, follow me. And he left all and rose up and followed him. I mean, publicans were not really well thought of in that society, but this guy, Christ said, follow me. What did he do? And he said, well, wait a minute, I've got an appointment at 4 o'clock. Maybe, no, he got up and followed him. He left all, rose up and followed him, and Levi made him a great feast in his own house. And there was a great company of publicans and others that were there. And the scribes and the Pharisees, they murmured against the disciples, saying, why do you eat and drink with publicans and with sinners? They were murmuring. They probably weren't talking to Christ about it, talking to his disciples, certainly talking about what's he doing with those people, with them. They, We were also talking, coming down about some of the early hippie folk music in the early 60s. And I remember one word that would creep up constantly was they. You know, look what they do. I don't want to take ownership of this. You know, it's them. Because there are certain conspiracy theories about, and some of you maybe are tend to like those things. I don't. Sometimes they turn out to be true, but basically, a lot of these conspiracy theories, they collapse under their own weight sometimes if you follow them logically. But some, you know, he was telling me some that he hears on All Night Radio. And I said, well, who's doing this? It's they. They're doing this. Who are they? Well, they never seem to get around to that. Maybe it's the government. What branch of government? State, local, federal? And some people do have predictions that are more specific. I did talk radio on a very limited basis for a number of years, and I remember getting all kinds of literature from all kinds of organizations. This was before the internet. Well, it was there somewhere. I wasn't familiar with it yet, but I heard all these conspiracy theories, and a lot of them went back to the Jews. Well, they're trying to run the world, you know, through the Manx, da-da-da-da-da. And it got eventually very anti-Semitic. But anyway, we hear these things, and people murmur. And we hear them all the time, and Jesus Christ was a victim of that. You know, why was he meeting with them, those people? They're probably the ones that needed him the most. And as we see later in Scripture, we can see where some of them repented. Some of them became Christians. Well, in order to fight the temptation to murmur, I had to deal with this week, in fact, with one member. We have to realize this. When talking to one another, when discussing things in hushed tones, what we say is important. What we say is important, because I talked to somebody about murmuring this week, and the person said, well, you know, I just kind of get it in my mind, and I just like to express myself. We have to be careful. What we say is important. Turn to James 3 in verse 2. James 3 in verse 2. And I've heard this in the church over the years, you know, murmurings. And I remember back in the 60s, we had a lot of speculation about when Christ was going to return. And I think some individual members and ministers got kind of maybe more specific than they should have. Well, as proved by the fact that we're still here. And but many of them, the ones that I knew, would say, well, we're not setting dates, but, and I had a good buddy who said, oh, they're not setting dates, but they know something that they're not telling us. Well, I hope you don't feel like that, but that's, they would say that. And they. No, these were, I could give you names, but I'm not going to do that. These were buddies of mine. They know something's going on here. They're just not telling us about it. James 3 and verse 2. It's important what we say. For many things we offend in all. If any man offend not in word by what he says, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle his whole body. If we can control what we say, that's a big step. That's a big step. Behold, you put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about the whole body. You know, I'm not a horseman, so I don't know, but, you know, if you pull on the reins a certain way, I've ridden horses a few times, you can tell the horse where to go. Behold also ships, though they be great, are driven of fierce winds, and yet they're turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor lists. So you can control a big boat by a little rudder in the back. Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. You know, when we hear these stories, little fires, little sparks, get out of hand and can, before you know it, you know, in one case I remember back in Philadelphia after I moved away from there, they had a group that was occupying a home in some neighborhood that was fighting off the police, and somehow something, well, it happened in Waco, Texas. Something caught fire and poof, in that case, the whole block went up in flames. Down in Texas, the Branch Davidians, I think they call themselves. Something happened where something sparked and the whole complex went up in flames. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. You know, we can say some pretty nasty things, mean things. Maybe mean to the person we're talking to, or maybe more likely something mean about somebody that's not there. So is the tongue among our members. It defiles the whole body, sets on fire the course of nature, is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts and birds, serpents, things of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Now, I was always told there was an exception, but some guy in Branson disproved the exception, and that you just can't train a cat. We have had cats. I believe that. Well, there was a guy in Branson who had trained house cats. I don't know how he did it. I couldn't control one little cat. We've got scratches on our furniture to prove it, even though he's been dead for a couple of years now. I finally killed him. No, I didn't. We loved him, but he does get on, they do get on your nerve. But the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. You know, the things that we say. Therefore, therewith we bless God the Father, therewith we curse men, which were made in the image and similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing, and my brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a fountain bring forth the same from the same place sweet water and bitter? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Or a vine figs? So no fountain can yield both salt water and fresh. You know, you have one or the other. So is a wise man imbued with knowledge among you. Let him show out of his good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. Again, the main point is it's important what we say. What we say is important, and sometimes we don't realize that. We think, well, it's just so much, you know, so much wind, but people take it seriously. My wife is always getting on me because I'll kid people about things. Sometimes I think I'm paying them a compliment, and sometimes they don't take it that way. I talked to Johnny Cash several times, and a few years ago I talked to him. I was doing a radio interview with him, and I thought this was a great compliment. If you know his story, he was a hopeless drug addict at one point, and that was the first time I ever met him. He was like that. Later, he overcame that. He became, you know, he revived his career. He had his own television show. He was going to move to Branson, which he did some shows there, but the whole big project fell apart, which was sad. But I said, you know, the first time I met you, I said, we took bets on how long you were going to live. Nobody bet more than 2 years. That was 20 years later. Now, to me, that was a compliment. That was, you were here, and look at you now. Look how you've overcome. Later, a book was published, and that, I am told, well, I read it. That encounter was in the book. Fortunately, they didn't use my name. But it was pretty obvious who they were talking about if you knew him, me, and you knew where he was at that time. In fact, my boss came in and said, I did some other things with him. He said, did you ever have Johnny Cash record an answering machine for you? I said, yeah. He says, you're in his bio. And then I apparently had said that to him, and also, according to the book, this is not true, that I'd said the same thing to June Carter. I would never have said anything like that to her because she was his salvation. She was is like his nursemaid. They weren't married yet, but she was very attentive to him, very protective of him and everything else. And I was more excited to meet her because I was a big Carter family fan than I was to meet him. But anyway, sometimes we say things, and I thought, well, you know, I thought that would be a compliment. Sometimes people don't take it that way. And so we have to be careful what we say. I should have kept my big mouth shut, which I probably wouldn't have made it into one of his bios if I hadn't, but fortunately they didn't use my name. Proverbs 17 and verse 9. Proverbs 17, 9. He that covers a transgression seeks love, but he that repeateth the matter separates very friends. Sometimes, you know, We need to cover things up. We need to just keep our mouth shut. Again, what I was talking to Johnny Cash about was not some deep, dark secret. Everybody knew all these things. And again, I meant it as a compliment, but sometimes we know things about people that it's best to cover up, to just let it lie, to not bring it up, you know. So, Proverbs 21, in verse 23. Whosoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. Have you ever said something? And then later, this is why some of us have flat heads. You go like that. Why did I ever say that? Once it flies, you can't reach out and take it back. And sometimes if it flies and two or three people get a hold of it and they tell two or three more people who tell five or six more, it gets completely out of hand. So we need to keep our mouth. Now, there is a time to speak up, and I'll talk about that a little later, but basically, we don't need to tell people all the delicious, slimy rumors and speculation that we hear. Somebody was talking about speculation. A lot of people will ask me, what do you think? What do you know? Well, I don't know anything, but I sure suspect a lot. That's the way we are sometimes. Proverbs 12 and verse 18. Proverbs 12:18. There is that speaks like the piercings of a sword, you know, that can really cut a person up. But the tongue of the wise is health. Sometimes it's nice just to say nice things about people. You ever do that and have it run full circuit and come back to you? That you said something nice about somebody who told somebody else, who told the person you were talking about, even though you never did tell them. But that's a good feeling, to say something nice about somebody and have it affect them. And we can do that. It produces health, as opposed to the piercings of a sword that we're capable of sometimes. Chapter 15 of Proverbs, in verse 4, the wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirits. You know, sometimes, a wholesome tongue, saying wholesome things, saying positive things about people and about situations. Sometimes if somebody's bad-mouthing a person, maybe you will have the opportunity to say something nice about him. What I often say, of course, this is usually a joke, but if somebody mentions a celebrity that they don't like, I'll usually say, yeah, but they always speak nicely of you. Which, of course, they know better than that, but that's kind of a joke. But sometimes it is good to be able to stand up for somebody that's maybe taking a whipping, or have you talked to him about that? He's not going to listen to me, you know, or whatever excuse they come up with, that you may come up with, that I may come up with. Matthew 18 and verse 3. Matthew 18 and verse 3. Okay, Matthew 18, beginning in verse 3. He said, verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. You know, we need to have a childlike attitude, and kids tend to be kind of innocent, most of them. So, well, I watched this video. I used to get mad at my kids all the time. I never had the proper affection for teenagers that I guess I should have, even my own children and grandchildren, because I was once a teenager, and I don't think I was like any of these kids. I mean, knowing that what I was like as a teenager, I always wanted to take children out and whip them, you know, because I was not like these kids in the video. I didn't have that opportunity, and I'm glad they do. And we have we don't have any teenagers in our church, but we have a couple of young married couples that aren't far from being teenagers. These are the most wonderful people we could have in our congregation. And they're young, and anybody wants to despise their youth, that's fine. I think they're great. And I hope I've got them giving split sermons now, and they've done sermonettes, and they're four of them. They're all ABC graduates. And one of the things I keep telling them, don't ever move away. I'm selfish. I want you in this congregation. And they don't have any plans. Anyway, we're talking about kids here. Whosoever shall humble himself as one of these little children, his name is will be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receives me. And we do receive children in the church. Spiritual children. People who are new. People who maybe haven't been in the church all their lives, or in my case, probably two-thirds of my life. I'm trying to do the math real quick. You know, almost 50 years. But how do we treat them? Do we welcome them? Do we treat them warmly? Do we set good examples for them? Whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it'd be better for them that they were had a millstone hanged around their neck and were drowned in the depths of the sea. That doesn't sound real nice. You know, I always quote Tina Fey, if you're familiar with her. She's a writer and a comedian, and did a show recently called 30 Rock. I don't necessarily recommend it, but whenever something really attractive was spoken of, she would always say, not always, but usually say, I want to go to there, which is kind of a funny way of saying it. Well, this, I don't want to go to there. I don't want to do that. And woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses will come, but woe unto him by whom those offenses come. We need to realize we have a profound effect on what other people think and how other people react. And again, we don't realize that. Sometimes maybe we lack self-esteem, enough self-esteem to think, well, anything I say, nobody's going to pay attention to. Oh, yes, they will. Particularly new and impressionable people. Leviticus 19 and verse 16. Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among your people, neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord. So, we can't be talebearers. We don't need to be the ones that are spreading dirty little rumors, or dirty big rumors. We need to confront problems one-on-one. If you have a problem with somebody, you don't like what somebody's doing or what somebody's saying or what you heard about them, turn to Matthew 18 and verse 15. Matthew 18 and verse 15. Moreover, if your brother trespass against you, go tell him his fault between you and him alone. By that happened recently in the church. I mean, not to me, but someone came to me and, did you hear what so-and-so said? And said it quite publicly. And I said, no, you heard it though, didn't you? Well, yeah. Go talk to him about it. And apparently it got fixed. Between him and you alone. And if he will hear you, you have gained your brother. Sometimes that's all it takes. And then there are other contingency steps if that doesn't work, but start. If you've got a problem with somebody, start by going to them and talking to them. That's difficult sometimes. It's easier just to go to somebody else and tell them what a dirty snake this person is, you know. But go to them and talk to them one on one. Another way we cannot participate in murmuring is not to listen to murmuring in the first place. Not to listen to murmuring in the first place. I have a phrase that I use, and people are recognizing it now for what it's worth, when I'm confronted with conspiracy theories. And if I ever say this to you, take it in the most negative way, because usually it's a polite way of saying, well, I won't use the word that other people would use, who are less polite than I am, but my phrase is, I find that hard to believe. I find that hard to believe. You know, and there are conspiracy theories. One is that the Holocaust was all staged. That stuff never happened. It's one that was presented to me. If any of you believe that, by the way, when you come to Springfield and visit with Mr. Esslinger, Royce Esslinger, he was there. He was among the troops that liberated some of the concentration camps, some of the death camps in Germany and Poland after World War II, or mainly Germany, where he was. But if you tell me that or other things, I will politely say, instead of using that other word, I will say I find that hard to believe. Because I do. But so I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. If you got some dirt on somebody, you haven't talked to them about it, don't talk to me about it. Romans 16, now if you have and you're getting a hostile comeback from the person, maybe it is time to talk to the ministry about it. But don't talk to everybody about it. There are steps that are not thoroughly understood in Matthew there that you can take. Romans 16 and verse 17. Romans 16 and verse 17. Now I beseech you, brethren, to mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. You know, sometimes we just need to avoid people who are spreading dirt all the time or spreading false concepts once in a while. And that happens. You know, if they're, I've told people, if you don't agree with the doctrines of the church, don't talk to the next person. Talk to me about it. You can bring it to me. I can handle it. Well, hopefully I can handle it, but at least you're going to somebody that probably can give you a good explanation and not just feel bad about it. And we shouldn't be passing it on. It's not our job to pass this stuff on. Proverbs 17 and verse 9. Proverbs 17 and verse 9. He that covers a transgression seeks love. Whoop, there's the one conspiracy theory phrase or catchphrase is cover up. Of course we don't know. Of course I can't prove that. Of course I can't show you where that's true because there's a massive cover up. Some of these things get so massive that when you start adding it all up, half the people in the country were a part of it. He that covers a transgression seeketh love. Sometimes it's good just not to say anything. But he that repeateth the matter separates very friends. You know, there's a place for cover-ups. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13. 1 Timothy 5:13. First Timothy 5:13. And withal, they learn to be idle. It's talking about, you know, some people in the church wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but tattlers, busybodies, speaking things they ought not. Are these things true? Maybe in some cases they are, but maybe they just need to be overlooked or covered up or brought to the attention of the person that you're talking about, not just everybody else. So we can help by not passing things along, not participating, not being a part of it. I've got some questions to ask that maybe will clear up some thoughts that you may have at this point. When you are tempted to talk about something that's unseemly, that's nasty, that's negative, ask this. Am I saying this to someone who really needs to hear it? Or can do something about it? You know, sometimes there is time to talk to somebody about it. Maybe the ministry, maybe the person themselves. Particularly if you feel they're going to harm someone, either physically, emotionally, mentally, whatever, or harm themselves. There's times to say things to someone. Again, maybe the ministry. But am I saying this to someone who needs to hear it? Or someone, or can do something about it other than just feel bad. Most of my career in broadcasting, I was in management, and I had to deal with people. Somebody said, if you can have a job where you don't have to deal with people or machinery, you got it made. Well, one way or another, we all have to deal with that. And I had a policy, and the company backed me up on it. The quickest way to get fired, if you were in my department or under my supervision, was to repeat something negative about somebody to someone else, to one of your peers, or something negative about the company to some of your peers. You could come to me about it. Why not? Why not tell, you know, the guy on the next shift or the guy at the next desk? Why not discuss it with him? What's he going to do about it except feel bad? And that's a morale killer. And I found out some of my people used to like to get together for a few beers on Saturday night, maybe a few six packs, and discuss various problems they had with moi. One of them, I did make an exception, or I did say, look, if you got a problem, talk to me. If you don't feel you can talk to me, I believe in chain of command. You go up the chain of command. I said, skip me in the chain of command. You can go to my boss and talk to him about what I'm doing wrong, because he can do something about it. He can reprimand me. He can fire me, but he can do something about it. One of those guys took me up on it. After one of those Saturday night drinking bouts, I guess he'd had a little too much to drink, and he had the home phone of our CEO, which was in a different city, and called him about something I had done that he was offended by. Well, you know, he never was reprimanded for doing that. I certainly wouldn't, because I'd encouraged it, and the CEO knew him as well as he knew me, so it was, he handled it well. In fact, I got a free trip to Wichita out of it. Got to spend a couple of days up there. Got to stand on the carpet and be reprimanded for what I had done, because the CEO didn't agree with it either. So it got fixed. At my expense, maybe, although I, you know, it didn't hurt me in any way, other than maybe a little embarrassment. No, I don't know. I wasn't supposed to do that. But again, am I saying what I'm saying to someone who needs to hear it or can do something about it? Another question to ask is, does what I'm saying really need to be said? Does somebody really need to say anything about this? Again, sometimes there are cases where someone's going to harm themselves or someone else, but again, ask yourself, does this really need to be said? Another question is, would I want everybody to know I was saying this? Or am I saying it in hushed tones to only select people, including the person I'm talking about? How would you like that word to get back to the person you're talking about? You know, there was an old Norman Rockwell. It was on the cover of Saturday Evening Post, probably when I was a little kid, maybe back in the 40s, my grandmother showed it to me, and it showed somebody gossiping to somebody, person one up here, we'll call them, who turned around, gossiped to somebody else, who gossiped to somebody else, who spread the word to somebody else, and went all the way, like 20 people, and then finally went to another person who was the person being talked about, and then the final confrontation was number one person with the person who was actually, and very angry. You know, Norman Rockwell had a good way of expressing things, but would you want that person that you're talking about to know that you're talking about it and what you're saying about that? And another one, the big one, another question, am I willing to be accountable for the damage that might be done because of what I'm saying? Do I want to be held accountable for any damage that is done, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's emotional, whether it's spiritual damage that might result from what I'm saying? Turn to Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouths, but that which is good, to the edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, and a lot of that is a result of bitterness, a lot of our murmuring, and wrath, and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Again, this is negative stuff that we're almost always talking about. Be kind to one another. That's to everybody that you come in contact with. Be kind to one another, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. God doesn't write us off. God has hope for us. God has promise for us. God has plans for us that are exciting, and even for these other people that we might not like in or out of the church. He plans to use them. And sometimes if I'm angry at somebody for something small, I'll just picture, what does God see? Does God see this person for what they've done, maybe? Does he see me for what I've done? Or does he see potential? I think God sees potential. And because of that, we're all still here. So let's ask ourselves these questions whenever we're tempted to murmur. Let's look at some of the examples in Scripture. Let's not take part in murmuring by either speaking or even listening if we can help it. And let's not murmur. And remember, yes, the feast is going to be in Branson this year, as far as I know.